Hey everybody, it's Nolan North, you know, Nathan Drake from Uncharted, and you're listening to the Geek Apocalypse, our podcast.
God, it feels like forever since I've done this intro, because it has been. Welcome everybody to the Geek Apocalypse podcast with yours truly, Mr. Stephen Hesse, and thank you for that very generic introduction that made no real sense and was a stopgap before it even started, but welcome to the genius that is me. Genius or ingenious, I'll let you be the judge. But yeah, as I just explained, I haven't done an introduction, I should say, for this podcast in a while. And if you listen to the updated one I released before this one, it will explain in more detail the terrible few months that I've had. So if you want to listen to that very honest and open solo podcast I did as a kind of just half an hour update, you'll figure out why I've not had a laptop for 4 weeks and had some bereavements in my family and one of my close friends. And I was also sick for a while. So hopefully we'll be back in the swing of things from this point on. And this is part one of a hosted episode that we did about 7-8 days ago with me and Ricky, my good self, with Ricky, who also we host Mentally Sound, which I should explain is another podcast we do, which is a mental health one, which you can also hear on iTunes, which is a brilliant radio show, complete with music and live guests. And we've been doing that since April of this year on Spice FM 98.8 FM in the northeast of England. You can listen to it online. And so we talk about that to begin with. But with this episode, Geek Apocalypse, being unfiltered and over 18, as we get and open and honest and frank, obviously not over FM airways, we talk about a variety of different things. Anyone who listens to this show knows that it's very tangenty. We start off talking about Mentally Sound and about that update very briefly, and then we talk about Space Cadets, which is a panel show from the 90s, which led us on to loads of panel shows that we like, and also Who's Lying, because Greg Proops did hosted Space Cadets. We talk about Channel 4 and our history and our memory of Channel 4, which is channel in the UK, a television channel, and we talk about the Great Bake Off and how we don't get it. We talk about guests who appeared on that Space Cadets program, which leads us to sci-fi stuff. We talk about previous guests on this podcast, like Claudia Christian and others. And it's just a really, really nice casual chat with a good mate of mine. And I hope you enjoy it. And we talked about it because we enjoyed being together and talking like we did. We ended up talking for so long that, as I said, I put this into two parts because otherwise it would have been longer than I would have wanted. So we talk about a great deal of stuff, and then we end by talking about Michael Sheen playing Kenneth Williams. So that'll be what you hear in part two, so please do listen to that when I release it very, very soon. As I said, I'm trying to get back in the swing of things. Hannah, who was on the last Mentally Sound, the one before that in August, she's going to come on to talk about her stuff she's doing for her PhD, which is interesting. And obviously you can follow us at @geek_apocalypse, and please do subscribe to us on iTunes where you get the episodes before anybody else. And like I say, there'll be a part two of this episode very, very soon. But here's the hosted episode of September with me and Ricky. Enjoy! Booyah, one take. That's good, because I think that should be.
But yeah, exactly, because that's the standard, that's the bar you expect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard, I mean, this would be a good start and talking point, because I'm recording all this, so, you know, audience can hear this, because it's an interesting, it's an interesting thing to think about, because that was one of the things, you know, talking about Mentally Sound, is that that was one of the things that basically I had the attitude of, which was I wanted to do the best show. Whereas I think the problem we've had during the whole process of doing it is that it felt like a little bit like a conveyor belt of people that just sort of like, you know, like we were like we were their sort of their go-to mistress or something, and they can go to us and like abuse us and do what they need to do and then leave and then forget that we exist, kind of thing. Whereas to your point, it's like, I'd rather be like, you know, married to it and, you know, continue to have a really good marriage and improve. That's like a very strange metaphor, but I hope you get what I mean.
Well, as soon as you said our mistress, I was like, what, podcast prostitutes?
Sort of, yeah. But no, I just meant like...
But it goes back to, you know, when everybody says, treat every day like it's your last, or, you know,
yeah,
treat everything like it's make it the best ever. That's how I treat each show. Mm-hmm. Strive and make it the best. So I make no apologies for saying that at the end of the show. I genuinely feel we've really done a good job.
Well, that's why... The
spice that we've done has been.
So yeah, I agree with that. And I think the reason that that's healthy and the reason that, like, you became the permanent co-host was because of the fact that, like, it's something because I have to have an... When you're particularly, like, the host and you have to sort of keep things going and if you're behind the scenes sort of making all these suggestions, you kind of have to have this approach of, like, this confident person. But underneath it all is, like, a, you know, which I think is the key difference from a lot of people who end up going into media. I mean, look at all the people who go on YouTube or do podcasts and think that they know how to talk to people and know how to have the energy to do this and all this. Like, you know, I think people would think, oh, I have the ability to talk to someone for an hour and a half, and you might do to one of your best friends, but we have to, in some cases, make a 20 to 30 minute conversation, not only to someone we don't know, but also interesting and to the point. And also they have their own agenda, which I think a lot of people don't, you know, think about when you do interviews, is that you're trying to work with each other, but at the same time you're both trying to get potentially different things out of it. Us in terms of getting the best show, and for most people who come on is that to try and promote whatever it is they're doing. And but I guess what's different with us is that it's like more like helping people, which is kind of nice. It's not necessarily about plugging a book and making money or something. Mm-hmm. But my point still stands. And I think what I'm saying in relation to what you just said is that, there has to be in doing this a certain level of like being humble, because you said something the other day, which you said in a jolly fashion, but you met in it, or like a jovial fashion, but then it is true in that, You jokingly said, like, who the hell are we? And I'm like, you're right in the sense of that, you know, we've just been given an opportunity to be on a radio station that has a bit of history, which is nice. It's definitely an upgrade from what we're doing, and that is a progression. So we should remind ourselves of that, which is what we're just doing now. But at the same time, you know, don't rest on your laurels and go, you know, because I'm sitting here going... And no disrespect to the, you know, I hope this doesn't come across as disrespectful, but I'm like, and it's all well and good, and, you know, we can't not turn down guests. But, like, the conversations me and you have behind the scenes, particularly for Mentally Sound, and look at the people I've had on here, on Geek Apocalypse, is it's having the mindset to go, you can always aim higher.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Spice wouldn't have happened with your, like, willingness to find a better alternative. You know what I mean? And like, and so I'm sitting with that incredible studio space and the fact that we have an FM licensed station. Yeah. You know, there's nothing stopping us from like sort of being like a BBC radio show, in the sense of like going to people who are guested on mental health related shows. You know, because like Emma Kenny, for example, who I didn't know, but you got on the show, who's been on a few things. You know, I'm not saying that notoriety is kind of important, but I guess it is in terms of us developing. And who's to say we can't get, you know, them people on to talk about mental health things, because then that's what it leads to. And I guess my point about the mistress thing is that very often as a mistress is that you're just used for a certain purpose, but you're never going to be beyond a mistress. Whereas I'm saying, you know, I think what me and you are connected with is wanting to make it as good as possible.
Well, I always approach when I look at guests as a making a 50-50 deal.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean that, okay, here we've got a platform, here's what we do, And we would love for you to come on because I genuinely find the work that you do interesting. So here's your chance to come on, plug all that you need. And let's just have a really good discussion. You'll get something out of it. We'll get something out of it. The listeners will get something out of it. And we go away happy. And then, you know, if it's that good, then you can come on again in a few months.
Yeah. Really good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. I also think as well, my sort of
just to follow on, it's not like they're taking advantage of us or we're taking advantage of them. It's just a really fair deal on the table. Here's what it is: we have this platform. Mm-hmm. It's quite unique because how many other mental health themed radio shows are out there? And let's just make it happen.
Yeah, most definitely, and. The thing is that the point I was gonna branch on with from what you just said is my sort of remit for a really good show for Mentally Sound, and it's the same for doing this. You know, I felt that when we were talking to Claudia Christian because it was interesting. Because if you talk to somebody like Claudia Christian, for example, you know, anyone who knows who she is would talk about Babylon 5. But I remember in the conversation we had with her, which lasted about an hour, most of it was not about Babylon 5. It was about her organisation to help with alcoholism, with that drug that she claims works. Yeah. And, you know, I asked her about, some of the films that I remember being in, Arena, which is one of the earliest ones she was in. And, you know, she talked about a wide range of stuff. And, you know, we got on to a little bit about kind of what she thinks.
And Space Cadets.
Yes, and Space Cadets, which is hilarious, yeah. And I sometimes question if that TV show ever existed because it's so weird. It's so.
One off, wasn't it? I wonder if it was planned as a one off or did they?
No, they made a series out of it.
It was a series, but I'm just wondering why no more series was it?
I'm gonna check because I told you this, right? I'm checking this as we're doing this now. I'm seeing if it's gonna. I'm gonna see if it's still on YouTube. And I don't consider this a bad thing to suggest because I don't like the fact that BBC don't put their own. Oh no, it's not BBC, it's Channel 4, isn't it? You never know, they might have it on. If they have it on 4D, I apologise, but I don't think they would. But I'm sure someone put them up and they had hardly any views. So that's usually a sign that it might still be there. But yeah, I watched a few of them, so you might want to, when I saw them, hang on, there you go. Somebody's got part one on from episode one. Is that the real
one series or two then?
I think they did two. There you go. First episode of the sci-fi quiz show from 1997, hosted by Greg Proops with team captains Bill Bailey and Craig Charles. Just reading that. Oh, right. No, actually, the thing I was reading about Space Cadets was a different program completely. But yeah, it just has a picture of Greg Proops with his stuck-up hair. I'm it's so weird. Oh, what a great show. For those that are going, what the hell are we talking about, if they're especially people in America, is we've talked about this before on the podcast, but it's a thing called Space Cadets. And it was with Greg Proops, who many will know from Whose Line's It Anyway, and Craig Charles, whose Red Dwarf was Lister, and Bill Bailey, who went on to be a very successful international comedian. And they were team captains, and it was a panel show, but it was it's meant to be set in on a spaceship, had a spaceship set, and it was very sci-fi heavy, and it was just weird. I don't know if Ricky's got anything to add to that, but is that the gist, basically?
Yeah, it's about 20 years old, I can remember.
Yeah, 1997, yeah.
William Shatner was on at least
twice. Yes. I remember seeing that one, because it was really weird. Because it was just a panel show on Channel 4, and all of a sudden they just go one episode's and William Shatner, and you're no, they can't be. He's just
he's the most one of the most recognizable faces, but this run,
yeah,
by perhaps a few people you did know. I mean, I think some because Ed Burns I remember is a really young Ed Burns appeared on the show. Robert Llewellyn, I think, was on once or twice.
Yeah, probably, because of Craig, yeah. I think probably Chris Barry, maybe.
I enjoyed it, for what it was. I think it was probably... It had, I think it had a very kind of... student evaluation, it was around about the same time as I was a student. I tried to get my cousins to watch it because it was around that time that the rumors that they were making Star Wars again, the prequel, so kind of like that was in the air.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see if I can find. By the way, you're breaking up again, so we might need to stop. In the meantime, if we can still hear, if this is still being recorded on the recorder, is what I will say is I'm in the process of trying to find if there's like a Wikipedia page, but there doesn't seem to be. And there was a Space Cadets made after, presented by Johnny Vaughan.
Oh yeah, when they sent the astronauts into space, but they didn't really go into space. It was like a prank.
Yeah, yeah, it was aired across 10 consecutive nights.
Yeah,
I don't remember that at all, to be honest. But
I do. Yeah, what was interesting about it was they took a lot of contestants to say, right, you guys can be. It was like Big Brother meets, sci-fi in a way.
NASA or something.
But what they did was they went through a really interesting, interview process where it wasn't so much questions, but they made them go through like tests. To see how vulnerable you were, and what they did, they ended up picking a team of the most vulnerable, where they knew this prank could sort of work on.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys genuinely believed it. They flew out to somewhere in Europe, like this dense forest that they used as a made up, which I think they pretended that it was Florida, but it was really in Europe somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they got them aboard this sort of Do you remember that Howard Stern episode where they had Gary? I don't want to say the word retard.
Well, yeah, it's not over here, but that is literally what he says. Ricky's like not being,
I wouldn't want to, but on his birthday, they made like a mock-up module of a spacecraft in the studio, and they said, "You're going to go into space."
I haven't seen that. No, that sounds funny.
Right, because no, it is funny, but they did a very similar thing on the show where, okay, guys, this is what it is, and they climbed in. It was more like a simulator.
I was just about to say, was it like a plane simulator?
And the shot of it was above the Earth, and they generally felt they were in space, but it very nearly didn't work because, from what I remember, again, when you remember these little things,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
a moth. Had suddenly like you know, and landed on the screen.
That's brilliant.
Well, I don't think they noticed, but the guys behind the scenes were like worried.
I remember once as well. It was really funny. I wish I'd remembered what the situation was, but I was watching it live. It was some sort of like event in space. And they had like a camera set up to see it all. Maybe it was like an eclipse or something, I want to say. And it's on like some blooper things on YouTube, right? Because this like big event in like this one telescope that was able to see it. I think NASA had set it up or something. And all you see is this big giant spider. it comes straight into the middle. And you see, this big like once in a lifetime eclipse is happening and this big giant spider's right on the lens.
wasn't it like part of a news
I think you're right.
Like one of those Dennis Norden
blooper thing,
right on the night.
yeah that kind of thing. I think it was like on a live news feed or something, and they go, "That's happening now," and then all of a sudden like this big giant huge spider from America, it's like just going, it's like hi. But no, and also,
because I think Johnny Vaughan's Space Cadets was also Channel 4. So So they had the same title to a different show on the same channel within a few years.
If you type it in, it's the first thing that comes up. It's got nothing about the other one.
Same, because if we're talking to an audience of people curious about Space Cadets, and they'll look it up and they'll see Johnny Vaughan and his show.
Well, as I say, if you type in Space Cadets Channel 4 1997, it comes up the one that the guy uploaded, and he uploaded it in bloody 2008. So some of them are still there. Like the first part of the first episode, it's all you really need to know. And someone's put, like, I'm guessing, because it's from, unless it's one episode. It looks like a compilation of the best bits or something. It just has space cadets and 24 minutes long.
I think the other thing to remember is...
Oh, there you go. I found its IMDb page. Hang on a second.
Right.
But yeah, go on. Sorry, finish your thought while it's loading. What were we going to say?
I remember at that time, in the mid to late 90s, these sort of... They were making comedy panel shows about anything.
Yeah, yeah.
like Jonathan Ross did one about TV and...
Hang on. If I click on full cast, there was 10 episodes for you.
Can you hear me now still?
Yes, I can hear you, but it just... Anytime you start a sentence, it breaks up.
I was saying, yeah, just any genre at that time, they just thought, well, we'll make a comedy panel show out of it. It just seemed the trend back then.
Well, you know, yeah, as I saw this clip earlier today with David Mitchell on Would I Lie to You, and he says, he makes this funny comment about, you know, if an apocalypse happens and we have to rebuild the human race, I'd rather be dead. And he goes, and so Rob Brydon goes, I agree with you, but why would you not want to be involved? And he goes, I have literally no skills whatsoever. And he goes, how long is it going to take after an apocalypse for people to start pitching panel shows again?
Yeah.
Literally about 2,000 years. He's like, I am utterly useless. Okay, so you'll be interested to know, right? Because I think you did say this. Oh God, there's actually some people as well on this that, I'm like, wow, that person was on an episode, that person was on an episode. Right, I remember another one as well, which we've totally forgot. Hang on, right, so this is going to be interesting. Right, for people who are listening, this is really a big deal, because, like, imagine being a sci-fi, bearing in mind, right, so I think Ricky's about 10 years older than me, I want to say. So Ricky would have been he would have been a teenager. I would have been about 10, maybe 9, when this was on, right? So imagine being a nerd at 9, which I was. I'm not going to speak for Ricky, but I was in 1987. I was a huge nerd. And I'll just rattle off a list of names of who was in Space Cadets. And just in case Ricky didn't hear what I just said earlier, there was 10 episodes because it has 10 episodes for Greg, Bill, and Craig Charles. So there was 10 episodes because they would have been obviously the team captains and he would have hosted
it. There was 5 episodes in each series?
Yes, 2 seasons, yeah. I'm assuming. Otherwise, I don't think they would have done...
Usually in British TV, it's 6 episodes on a series.
Yeah, I know, that's why 10 seems weird unless they cancelled it. And they might have cancelled it halfway through or something, I don't know. Right, but apparently there's a guy called Ford Kieran, who I don't know who that is, did 3 episodes and he was the most guest appearances.
Oh, he might be... I wonder if he's the guy... Who was...
Shall I click on him? Shall I click on him and make it? Let's play a guessing game right now. Okay. Apparently... Go on. Finish your hold.
He might have been like the Mr. Sci-Fi guy on there.
Let's have a look. Let's see what he's in. He was in Is It Bill Bailey? So that's probably how they got him on, because... his most famous thing, I think, in terms of British shows, he was in Rab C. Nesbitt.
Oh.
He apparently played the voice. I think it's a voice, though. He plays the dog.
Okay.
It's apparently a dog. Yeah, he plays Mad Dog.
Right.
And he does the ad voice, apparently, as well.
I am thinking of is somebody else, obviously, but...
Yeah.
You will be in one of the names.
And then he was in a television series called Chewing the Fat, which I have no idea what the hell that means. That was only one season.
He's obviously... Yeah, I think I know who he is. He's part of that sort of Scottish set of, like...
He was in Gangs of New York as well, but he only had a minor part in it. But yeah, and I mean, the thing that I most saw that he was in... Where was it? Apparently, the most recent thing he was in, which was for a long time, was called Still Game. He was Jack Jarvis. I don't know what that is. Apparently, according to that, it's been going for 12 years. I don't even know. I've never seen it. It says 50 episodes. So it must be like a... I don't know, I was going to say like a TV miniseries or something maybe, because 50 episodes in 12 years seems quite like long-winded.
That wasn't that long ago, I remember that.
But anyway, yeah, so he has, I mean, the reason I said I wasn't sure who he was is he hasn't got a picture on IMDb, so I didn't think he's not that well-known. Then we've got Claudia Christian, who's been on this podcast for 2 episodes, Fred McCauley, who... Anyone in England would know is like a Scottish comedian, quite well known.
He's all right, yeah.
Yeah, I quite like him. Sylvester McCoy had 2 episodes, Mr. Doctor Who. John Maloney. Now, is that the guy from Father Ted?
No, he's a comedian, stand-up. He's pretty good. I follow him on Twitter. He's all right. He also appeared on The Thing It's All Over, I think, one or two times.
All right. He's not really been on much. He's not really done much.
But
if he's kind of a comedian, he doesn't have to.
I think he's just content doing the stuff.
Apparently, he's been on the most thing he's been on recently, like in terms of TV. He's on the Right Stuff apparently quite a bit.
Right. Okay.
Is that off the air now? Because it just says 2015.
The Right Stuff.
Five, yeah. What? Is it still running?
It's on every morning.
I used to watch that every now and again. Kim Newman. I don't know who that is. This is going to be a game of, can anyone name who this person is? Yeah. Kim Newman. Okay.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, he's old.
Yeah. No. Kim, is he that might be him. I think it's a guy, not a girl.
Yeah, it is a guy.
Yeah, him. He must be that Mr. The fanzine guy, because every time there was a... he used to always press the buzzer because he knew everything.
I think you're right, because he looks like a... you might be right.
He had long hair and he got a bit of a goatee.
Yes, he had he's got a moustache and a goatee. I think he's he looks like he was in The Hunger Time Shift, which is a TV documentary. He's a writer and creator of a few things.
Yeah. Do you know
I think you're right.
Fantasy football, he had Stato.
Right. I see.
He was like the Stato.
Do you know what's funny? He actually looks a little bit like Stato in the picture I'm looking at.
Every time they had to think, they always used to turn him.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Then, as Ricky perfectly said, William Shatner did two episodes. So not just one, he did two. But that's not uncommon in TV. For those that are interested in knowing, having done some episodes. Being involved in episodes for TV is behind the scenes is that it's not uncommon in series because they just film them all in sequence. So for example, QI, for example, they'll do four in a day and finish the, because it drastically saves on production costs. So you do them all in the day, have the same audience gets to do multiple ones, and then you do four a day, and if say QI wants to do 20 episodes in a season, they could do it all in one week if they wanted to.
I remember, do you know Richard Osman, the guy from Pointless?
Yes.
I read an interview of his recently, and they said they record something like six to eight shows in a day sometimes.
Countdown. Yeah. I think I'm right in saying, in relation to that, a lot of quiz shows do that, because everyone thinks Countdown's live, and it's not. Or at least some people I've heard that think that. Jeff Stelling, who's a well-known football guy who ended up hosting Countdown, which was the longest running game show in England, for those that aren't from here. And it's like a word game where you get 9 scrambled letters, and you have to make the longest words, and you get points for the most, basically. And then there's also a bit where you do maths, and you have to get closest to a number out of 5 random numbers. And you can times and subscribe them and stuff. Anyway, if you look on YouTube, I'm sure you can find an example. But anywho, that is on every single day. And apparently Jeff Stellan said that, to your point, they would do 8 in a day. And then another 8 the next day. And then basically, I think within 3 days, do enough episodes to last the whole month. Yeah. But it's so intensive, and it's so, energy sapping. That's half the reason why people ended up not doing it, because it is, it's very trying. I mean, that's... For those that I mentioned QI earlier, supposedly the reason that Stephen Fry left QI was for that very reason, is that they didn't do just, 6 episodes. It's, one of the few shows in England where they do more than 6. And he just says it was getting too much, because there's clips of him on blooper reels where he loses his temper, where Stephen Fry loses his temper, and he just says it's because it's just the grind that you have to do, is that the audience has to pretend that they're saying something not for the 400th time. And
here's a question: when they record all them shows in the one day, do they get the presenter to dress differently on
yes
time?
Yes,
they do.
Yeah,
to make it okay.
But what you will notice, right? If you watch, I can give you one example of where that's broken, and this is how they get around it. Whose line is it anyway, who we just mentioned, which is a good segue because it's Greg Proops, who we were just talking about Space Cadets. On the American version, they did that many because they would record just a live improv show, and then what they would do would take the games together. So they would film them all in the same clothing for about 2 hours and just do game after game after game after game after game. And then they would stick it all together, and as long as the clothes matched, it didn't matter. And then they would do another 2 hours, maybe in the next couple of days, with the same clothes, and would mix together all the games and then pick the best ones. But when it started to become popular, they wanted to make more episodes, so they took all the content from the ones that they didn't use and then crowbar them all together, and they're all the same clothes, and yet they could be two seasons apart, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
So they would release that the unseen bits, and they would pretend it was a new episode, but then Ryan Stiles and whatnot would go, no, we actually filmed that like 12 months ago.
Yeah.
And they would just take all the games that they didn't release that weren't as funny as the ones that they would use and cram them all together and put a new show out, because they just, it was really, really popular, and they wanted, it was meant to be like what's known in American TV as sort of like a filler show, in that they could get a huge amount of content out of it for very little money, because all it is just people playing games. It doesn't require a huge amount of thought and production. And that's why, like, as well, in certain episodes of Whose Line, if you carefully watch the audience, there's quite a few episodes where the same people are in the audience, because, like I said earlier, if anyone's ever been to a television taping, the same audience is... Sorry, go on.
No, I remember noticing you'd see the same particular audience members. And the other thing, going off from what you said,
mm-hmm.
They would often, I think at the end of each series of Whose Line, they'd always have like a couple of compilation shows, and Clive Anderson would always introduce it as like, here's some of the bits that didn't make it to the original, and we'll put a compilation in.
Yeah.
Just a quick note of Whose Line. I wish I was in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Festival this year, because they had a reunion.
Right. Wait, the original, the English one, or the...
Yeah, the English one. So Clive Anderson did post some shows, and Colin Mochrie flew in from America.
Canada.
Mike McShane, Tony Slattery made his comeback. People were excited about that.
Oh, that's interesting.
There was a few new, like, additions. Like, I think Phil Jubitus and a couple of others. Richard Branch.
Yeah.
Steve Frost. It was just all the gang.
Like, the sort of original Comedy Store players.
Yeah. And Josie Lawrence as well, because I preferred the
English
British
one.
Version to the American
one. I preferred the American one, but there were bits in the English one which was ridiculously funny.
Yeah.
I would have probably said the English one with Clive Anderson hosting, and when Ryan and Colin became regular members as well, but they still had English people on it. Like, that, I think that to me would be my favourite, like, mix of the two.
My favourite lineup would be, I would have Greg Proops, Ryan Stiles, Mike McShane, and Tony Slattery. They were my four funniest.
All right.
Because Tony Slattery and Mike McShane had a TV show on the back of Whose Line.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but they did their own.
If you ever watch, like, they mentioned this because Tony Slattery was on Secret Life of a Manic Depressive, because he's got bipolar disorder.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where he says, because it used to be a joke, and it was quite a nasty joke, but people used to start saying it as a, like, a go-to thing that would get a laugh, was if somebody was on a, I guess, like, Jimmy Carr in England over here would be regarded as what Tony Slattery was like in the 90s, where it used to be a joke of going, if someone was on TV too much, you'd be like, oh my God, it's another Tony Slattery, because he was on TV, like, a lot, because Whose Line would be played constantly, and he would be on, like, you know, Room 101 as a guest, and there's a compilation I have of the first 24 seasons of Have I Got News For You. It was the compilation they did, and in the first, like, few seasons of the clips that they've got from the really old ones, Tony Slattery's a guest an awful lot of times.
Really?
Yeah, I think they were. It's always the same whenever they try seasons, though, as they always get, like, the go-to, the people who would say yes kind of thing. you find on any panel show or whatever when it first starts. Like, is it something I said? I've seen some clips of where it's like on Channel 4 where David Mitchell's hosting and like Jimmy Carr's the guest, and you know, it's just like they go to people who I guess they would be all they know, would they don't have to worry.
Jimmy Carr used to get a lot of flack because, you know, I think in like some of Ricky Gervais's podcasts, he always say whenever they refer to like, yeah, let's have a new program, and you always end it with hosted by Jimmy Carr.
I know, yeah, because
he used to do all the. Do you remember when Channel 4 used to do like the top 10 of anything going?
Yes.
It was always him that was presenting them, and I think it got kind of tiresome.
I rate him as a presenter. I think he does a really good job for a comedian who kind of has just learned how to do it. But I do agree with the premise of, like, there was a particular time where he was just doing too many shows. He was on, like, everything. Because he had that... He first started with Distraction, and then he did that dating show, which I think you said was coming back, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was.
Shauna, what was her name? Shauna Shupta or something. I can't remember her name now, but...
It's like Who's Hotter, and they do like a couple vote now.
Yeah, it's like a rude thing where they just be honest if they like them or not. But by the way, points to you, because I still have the guest list for Space Cadets up.
Okay.
And Ed Byrne did have an early episode as himself.
Yeah. He was on the same episode as Claudia, if I remember correctly.
Maybe, yeah, but So anyway, just I want to finish this this list, because it's like a who's who of people. It's quite it's quite insane. So Shatner did two, and then we go on to people who only went on once. So Sophie Aldred, I have no idea who that is. So let's click. But then the other ones coming up are people, all loads of people I've heard of who went on to do, you know, really well for themselves. Sophie Aldrell, what was she in? Oh, she was in Doctor Who. What a surprise. Okay. I thought I recognised her. She also did a few, she's done a few video game voiceovers that I've heard of. She did Dragon Age. That's a good series. Yeah, she was in Doctor Who.
It'd be interesting to, you should try and get Kim Newman to do a podcast. I think it'd be interesting of you.
Yeah.
Make a note of him.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's the type of level that would be worth a shout. Someone who's just incredibly geeky. Ronnie Ancona did an episode.
Oh.
Who anyone in England knows as a comedian. Chloe Annette did one episode, which makes sense because she would have been a regular on Red Dwarf as Kachansky. Yeah. Alexander Armstrong, who now does Pointless.
All right.
Yes, I think I'm right in saying.
Right. So that means if he was on, that means Ben Miller must have been on.
Yes, correct. Points to you. Because I think we're thinking the same thought. Is I think I'm right in doing, were they doing their sketch show around about this time?
They were like Mitchell and Webber that.
Yes. Yeah. With, what's the girl's name who ended up in Coupling? Sarah something, wasn't it? Sarah Suching. There was a woman in that who ended up being in Coupling, which is the thing that, Colin Ferguson was in the English version. Oh no, he was in the American version because the guy who ended up doing Doctor Who, and why am I blanking on his name? Stephen Moffat. It was a series by Stephen Moffat. It was kind of like our version of Friends. It was alright. And it lasted a bit, and it's got a little bit of a cult following because a few well-known people ended up in it, but anywho. So that makes sense. So they would have been, so it obviously mentioned what they were promoting at the time. Sarah Cox, who is a well-known radio DJ. Mm-hmm. Kevin Day, who's a football guy. Oh, yeah. Football reporter slash comedian. Felix Dexter, which I have no idea who that is.
The late great Felix Dexter. He was part of...
I think he's from West Indies, apparently.
Yeah, he was one of the first of major black stand-up stars and...
Wow.
And ended up doing a lot of programs, yeah.
Apparently, he was in Armstrong and Miller.
Right, yeah, he did he was in the Fash, I think he was in the Fash show for a little bit.
He was in Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, in 1994.
Yeah.
Two points to you. God, that's a real, like, two geeky points to Mr. Ricky, because he's on fire today, he was in the Fash show for one episode. That's total nerd points right there. He was in a few things. I was in 15 Stories High, which is that thing, for those that don't know, that was written by Sean Locke and a certain Mr. Mark Lamar.
I want to watch that again.
Apparently it was good. It won like a BAFTA and stuff. So,
I think it was on Rates as well.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like ridiculously good, but I've never seen it. It's 15 years old now, believe it or not.
He's another one that ended up on these sort of panel shows when I thought he was good enough to star in his own series, but he became a sort of panel show regular. And
yeah. Apparently the last thing that this guy, Felix Dexter did before he died, unfortunately, because he's dead, unfortunately, is he did Citizen Kane, which I'm guessing was a redo. It was a television series called Citizen Kane. Apparently he's in 13 episodes of that. That sounds American. The things you find out. See, this is we're essentially what we're doing on this podcast right now. It's what I do in my spare time on my own. It's just read about all these different things. Bruce Dickinson. Now that sounds like someone I should know. Bruce Dickinson. Why does that name ring a bell? I don't know. Now what a time for my internet to not work.
Lead singer of Iron Maiden.
He looks like it is. Yeah. Is he?
I know he's a pilot as well. I didn't know he was into...
Yeah, that looks like that is who it is, yeah. Wow. What a scoop. I was wondering what... The pause there was just because my dog just got up. And he was like, what's that noise? But he's drinking out of his bowl. It's a weird sound.
Is he a Bruce Dickinson fan? He just said Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah, he just said, no, I think he's not, because he just walked out the room. He's like, I'm not listening to this Bruce Dickinson conversation. Oh, wait a minute. He's come to say hello, so maybe he is. Hello. You're an Iron Maiden fan. Who'd have thought? what a scoop that must have been for them. They also had Rob Grant, who was the other half of Grant Naylor from Red Dwarf, which makes sense. Max Grundenschick. I don't even know how to say that properly. He doesn't sound English to me. That sounds German. He was in, oh my god, I'm losing geek points here. I really am. I think I'm losing an audience here. I realized his name. He was in Deep Space Nine, Star Trek. Okay. And he was the Ferengi, and I'm blanking on his name. Oh god, I forgot his name now, but he was friends with Benjamin Sisko's son. People who are Star Trek fans are going to be screaming at me right now. But anywho, let's see if I can find it.
Well, on Deep Space Nine would have been like filming and on at that time, wouldn't
yes, it? It would have been mid-season, yeah. 1999 it finished. He was Rom, that's it. God, that would have been bugging me for the rest of the night if I didn't track that. Yeah, he was Rom, which was he was a family member of Quark, the Ferengi who worked on the station. That makes sense, because I was reading the rest of it as well. They were very Star Trek heavy. Then they had Hattie Hayridge, who's Holly, who's been on this podcast as well. The female Holly, I should say, because there were two versions. Simon Higson, who is he from Fast Show? That Simon Higson rings a bell. I'm sorry, I've become endlessly fascinated by this. Well, while that's loading, I'll reveal the ones we do know.
Higson's a Fast Show. Higson rings a bell as well, but I don't know who.
Yeah, I think I got there. I think I'm thinking me Simons, because that's an assignment, something else, isn't it? I don't know who this is. He's not really been in anything. So, don't know who that is. Walter Koenig, who was Chekhov in the original Star Trek. So that must have been a coup. Robert Llewellyn, Crichton, obviously, also been on this podcast. Ben Miller, who you mentioned earlier. Susan Moore, who I have no idea how that is, but Trevor Neal was on this, which is a pretty big deal. Even though he hasn't got a. That's quite. Oh, it's not. I don't think it's the one I'm thinking of. No, it's not the Trevor Neal I'm thinking of. He's a writer, apparently. Yeah, okay. That's slightly disappointing. Terry Pratchett, believe it or not, had one episode.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty insane. Legendary writer, obviously. Armin Shimerman, who was who I just mentioned, he was Quark. So that makes sense. So he would have been around promoting Star Trek. Tricia Sullivan. That rings a bell. Who's that? And someone called Gareth Thomas, who's got an IMDb picture. I'm going on the fact, like, probably like a lot of people are on IMDb, who go, if they've got a picture, there must be someone important. Apparently as well, the only thing that this Tracy Sullivan is known for is being on Space Cadets. Wow. So, what a career she had.
And it remains so, yeah.
But apparently, I'm guessing she was in an episode of Star Trek and someone's just not put it on, because apparently the episode of Space Cadets was titled Vulcans versus Klingons. So I'm wondering whether they had people who, she maybe played a Vulcan or something, maybe in an episode and it was uncredited or something. Maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Well, there you go. So Space Cadets, 1997. God, Craig Charles must have made a fortune in the 90s. You know, he had Robot Wars and Red Dwarf and, you know, now he's on Corrie. You know, anywho, that's enough of Space Cadets, because people think that you spent like 20 minutes talking about it. Anywho,
he recently finished on Corrie, didn't he?
I think so, yeah. I think he's gave it up, which is pleasing, considering I'm hoping he continues to do Red Dwarf, because I think he basically said he wasn't doing enough, right? I don't watch it, but I think he wasn't doing enough.
He also appeared on They Think It's All Over as well.
I know, I remember that, yeah, where he Yeah, I remember it. He looked a bit funny to me. I don't know whether you thought that. Like, he looked a bit stoned.
He was quite brash.
Yeah.
The thing is, he got introduced by Nick Hancock. But every time he butted in, Nick would say, yeah, what was that again? Annoying Scouse what? Just to stop him from interrupting. But he was quite funny. He did a very funny skit where... they used to do it, have a round where they would sort of play a bit of sporting footage and have some alternative commentary on.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Do you remember the World Cup in 94 in America, and Republic of Ireland were in a match? And if you remember anything about that World Cup, it was so incredibly hot.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Charlton, the linesman, about, you know, when to bring substitutes on and you know, throwing water onto the pitch and stuff. And
I know, you're on about John Aldridge.
Yeah, John Aldridge.
Yes.
He had that classic sort of Scouse-tash look about him.
Yeah, when he's going, because he is Scouse, so it makes sense, so it's authentic, and he's all like, hey man, what are you doing? What are you doing like? Yeah, and I mean, if anyone's seen that meltdown, it's the funniest thing, where John Aldridge is just swearing at the fourth official, because they won't let him on. It's just so great. But no, yeah, you're right, he did do a good job of that, and it made sense of being authentic, being that he is Scouse, so that was funny. So Space Cadets, I'm actually quite shocked that, like, the thing out of all that where we were doing it was, I can't believe it was only 10 episodes, it felt longer, but, yeah, you know, as you said, they don't do many episodes of a series these days, in England anyway.
They ban and all that stuff, that kind of thing would take off now.
Sorry, say that again?
I was going to say, with the popularity of shows like Big Bang Theory and stuff, that a show like Space Cadets could work now.
I know, yeah. I think it was probably, like a lot of shows like that, when they don't last very long and, you know, people remember them, is just ahead of their time, basically. that's what it certainly feels. It certainly felt like that even while watching it. But there you go. But I mean, as you said, if you think panel shows were overdone in the 90s, like now... You can't swing a cat on TV without catching a panel show. Because they're just so easy to make. That's really, if you look at them from a production point of view, the reason that they do so many of them is because they're cheap, easy to do.
Well, the formats are simple. I mean, you pick a genre, you have two teams, fill each side with a load of comedians, you're bound to get laughs. So it's like...
Yeah, and it's just a couple of tables and some chairs. I mean, that's essentially all it is, and you know, the most expensive thing you'll pay for is the cameras and stuff.
I mean, the shows, I mean, Mock the Week used to be my favourite.
Yes.
But I really think they should pack it in now, because I don't like this new set of comedians, and it's almost like they don't really get satire as the earlier contestants like Frankie Boyle and so
It's
on.
Not really satire anymore, is it really? It's become just an every other panel show.
It's quite smutty and quite sort of, you know, just...
Yeah, it reached a point for me. It reached a point for me quite early on where that was what was happening. It started to become, you know, it's one of the reasons why people say the QI is so fondly, you know, watched, is because it
still has legs, and so does Have I Got News for You. Mm-hmm. But it's like with Mock the Week, it was made by Dan Patterson, who made Who's Line.
Yes,
and a lot of the Who's Line crowd. Was involved in Mock the Week early on. People mm-hmm. like Sandy Togsvig and all them used to be on, Rory Bremner.
Yeah.
And it really got the show to a big start. And when they got Frankie Boyle, it was like, you know, wow. And, you know, because, you know, he's so on the ball with everything.
Yes.
And then sort of post Frankie Boyle, they've never really got that creative peak anymore.
They were okay.
People like Russell Howard. Russell Howard so on were good on that. But it's got once the regulars started leaving, it just wasn't the same anymore, and I stopped watching it.
Yeah.
I still think Bob Green's really good, but I think the captaincies and, you know, Ed Byrne is one of the originals that still goes on.
I like Ed Byrne. That clip where he's trying to get a joke. Have you ever seen that joke on the bloopers on Mock the Week where Ed's trying to do a joke and people keep butting him in?
And he tries to get the microphone.
Yes,
people always beat him to it.
Yeah, know? and he's like going there, going, "Can I get this? Can I get to the fucking microphone?" And he's just like, "Am I invisible?" Then he does the joke, and he like falls flat because he's like, "It's not worth the wait." Like
one of my favorite times going up the Edinburgh Fringe was I think 2005 ish or something when those comedians on that show were like doing regular sets up there, so I could tell that we were on the cusp of, like, you know, satire being like really popular again. So I saw Andy Parsons and Frankie up there, and it just seemed to catch a vibe at that time.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, you know, George Bush, but you know that it's a shame because it could really happen again. I mean, you know, Trump is a walking satire in himself, you know.
Well, there's people like just to reaffirm that point. There's people in like America, like Jon Stewart, who said, "Why did I retire? Because I didn't think Donald would win." And then he's like, "I miss my." He's like, "Because there was an interview I saw him do with Stephen Colbert because he took over from Letterman, and it wasn't too long ago. And he asked him about how's your retirement going, and he goes, "To be honest, I don't really miss the day-to-day grind of doing the Daily Show because it was really, really hard work. And I had to keep up with all the, you know, current affairs and had to read books and, you know, about, like, particularly about the guests and stuff like that." And he says, "But when Trump won," he's like, "I got, every now and again, I get the urge to go, I really wish I had my own show back."
I think we've talked about this before because, you know, like how many shows are recorded in one day regarding...
Yeah.
I mean, Have I Got News for You, right? I really like that show. But why is it only on like twice a year when you think there's things happening all the time? Is it to do with like, you know, because I know... Ian,
probably so, money reasons, I'm guessing, because of it being BBC. Because, yeah, I've always thought like they could do that once a week, being that it's a political show. But they maybe argue that they run out of steam. I don't know. Because they could do it like America, like Bill Maher. They could do it like Bill Maher or like The Daily Show, because they're on... The Daily Show is on, like, as far as I know, 5 days a week, like Monday to Friday, for half an hour. Yeah. I mean, Bill Maher's show is on... Well, I think probably Bill Maher's its closest comparison, but Bill Maher's is much more political and less about laughs. But that's why Paul Merton is so great on that show, because he compliments Ian.
Well, I think because Paul's a lot in demand, you know, he does shows, and Ian sort of still edits the private eye, that I guess that's probably Joe.
But no, I think theoretically your point of, because they probably, I think they average about 12 episodes a season, something like that, maybe less, maybe 10. So they must take a whole... go on.
In the day when Angus Deaton used to present, they used to have like election specials and Christmas specials. And
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore.
I know, yeah. And also as well, like, they can't do... Have I Got News for You are different as well, because they do film weekly because they have to be current.
Yeah.
So they can't do, like, a bulk of them in a row. So they'll be recording for like 10 weeks and then they take most of that week off. I know they have, haven't got compilations and seen a bunch of series, is that they do, they have, they do like, they're averaging about two seasons a year. So they must take a good 30 weeks off, 30 weeks of the year off. So, but no, I think what you said earlier is a very valid point. They could theoretically, be on once a week. Cause like I say, Bill Maher's show, I think's an hour, 2 hours, maybe an hour. I think it's an hour. I think it's an hour from what I remember. And it's on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And they could theoretically do that whenever it's on over here. They could do it every week. And because the thing that we've just mentioned and the reason why other panel shows become very, very, they run out of steam is because if you're just doing jokes based on stuff that's happened, in Mock the Week's case, like just games and repetitive stuff. Whereas, Have I Got News for You and QI have the advantage of that every show is completely different. Because for the most part, like, unless it's like a really big story, Have I Got News for You, they don't have a script in the sense of they won't know their script until like a couple hours before they start. Because they don't know that they're talking about what's happened that week. Which makes it fresh no matter what you do to it. Whereas in QI is that because they have the alphabet series where they change what they talk about, is it's very much down to what the researchers come up with and how the comedians respond to whatever the subject matter is about. So that's why out of all the panel shows that I watch, still to this day, I like them the most because of the variety, you always have to have similarity, which is why I think losing Stephen Fry is a big blow to QI, because I've never really rated Sandy Toksvig. I think she's okay, but she isn't Stephen Fry. I still
have a fondness for her because she, those lines anyway, she was a regular on there. She used to do a kids' TV show in the 80s called Number 73.
I remember that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, he was good on there. So,
but I've just never liked her. It's just like just sort of personal opinion. I don't mean like I don't dislike her as a person because I don't know. I don't know her, but I just mean like I've never liked her comedy. I've never found her that funny. It's my opinion. But
well, the important thing to remember is that regarding Have I Got News for You, that was derived from the News Quiz, which is a Radio 4 panel show, and it's been going on forever. And they are on every week, but obviously they're radio, so it doesn't take so much work to put in. Mm-hmm. And she used to be team captain on that, and then she used to host it until she left because she was doing more TV work. But what do you make of Bake Off? Because I still don't get it.
By the way, just for the people who are listening, he means the TV show Bake Off. He doesn't mean like the concept. Like, what's the deal with Bake Off? No, I'm assuming you're referring to them changing. Just to reiterate to the audience, I don't have a TV license or a TV. Well, I have a TV, but obviously it's not plugged into regular channels over here. So, but I do remember all the faff. So I'm saying, Ricky, you'll have to fill me in about what he's just referring to, because as far as I know, this is what I know about the Great Bake Off thing, is that did the contract run out with BBC, I think, or it got bought out by Channel 4? So there's all this, like, hoopla about who's going to go over. So what's the situation now? Have they done it on Channel 4 yet?
Yeah, and Mel and Sue got replaced by Sandy Toksvig and Noel Fielding.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why? Noel Fielding?
Yeah.
That is the weirdest.
Mary Berry got replaced by some other foodie.
I remember she met, is that the old lady?
Yeah.
I heard that she went on like Graham Norton and said that she wouldn't do it. Okay. What about the grey-haired guy with the spiky hair? Did he decide to do it?
Well, Hollywood, yeah, he's still there. He's the only one who's sort of stuck by.
My
remark was really more generic. Why? How come this show gets all the fuss that it does? I mean, when it comes on TV,
you meant you don't get it as in you don't get its appeal?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I just, they're all talking about it, you know, whenever. He's essentially just a load of people baking pies and cakes. And
that was why I was laughing, because...
In a big tent?
I know, yeah. It's like a big, tense moment. The reason I was laughing is because there was one clip that my mom used to watch it when I still was living at home. So I have seen bits of it, and it is sort of interesting. Like, I mean, I guess, like, you know, if you watch stuff on certain food networks and whatnot, like, food programs can be interesting. Like, if you just see, like, people and what they do with things. But there was one clip I saw, and I can't even remember what it was, but I think it may have been somebody arguing, maybe it was on, like, Room 101 or something, like, the more recent one, where they were arguing about how terrible that program was, and they showed a clip of, like, and whoever the presenter was, so let's say it was Frank Skinner, went, now here's an example of how the Great Bake Off, the intense, like, tension that you feel about whether, and about what's going to happen, so watch this clip, and they show this clip, and it's a woman who's making, like, they're doing desserts, like a cake or something, and the guy's, like, going into the fridge, and he's about to get, like, his custard, like, and it's a particular custard that he makes, like, his own thing, and then they all freak out, and then Sue goes over and goes, what's just happened? And then the woman, like, really deadpan, like, in tears, goes, I've used his custard. It's just, like, and then it cuts back to, like, the studio going, what the fuck's going on? Like, how is that? TV.
Did somebody on Room 101 wanted to put it in?
I think it was Room 101 or something like that. It was somebody arguing that it was shit. So I'm guessing it was Room 101.
I just don't get the mass appeal. Why everyone? I mean, okay, it can be in an entertaining show, but how's it been? Like, how's it the most popular?
As I just described, the most highlight of one episode was that someone else accidentally used someone else's custard. Yeah. Like, what? Who gives a shit? Like, just use your. Like, I think even Sue at one point went, "Can you make another batch?" It was like, I don't know, like, they were saying, like, it might have been too late based on how far in the process they were. But, like, surely, if they'd made enough for, like, another person, they could have just made some really quick custard. I don't fucking know. I mean, I know it would have made the flavour different, and it would have ruined it to a certain extent, but, I mean, it's not a big deal. But maybe it's just me. Like, you see, I'm not foodie in the slightest, and that I don't make, like, really eccentric, you know, food or something. Like, I make the basic stuff, and... Yeah. You know, I'm not really that.
I just try to sit down and really try to get it. And okay, you can argue that, okay, that, you know, it's a popular pastime. It's made sort of and pies and all that. But
you know, really,
I mean, it's not as if there isn't any loads of other cooking shows that have already been on.
Did you also mean when you said I don't get it? Because just to clarify, and you know. I'm willing to respond to it if I think you've meant it the way you said, as well as that was part of what you just said in reference to the, like, euphoria of the reaction of the moving and, like, how it got talked about so much. Was that part of what you were getting at?
That as well.
Yeah.
But even before that, when it was at its height on the BBC, because it was a BBC Two show and then it got made to BBC One.
Yes.
I can understand it being an entertaining show to a degree, but what is it about this show that makes people talk about it more than anything else?
That's what baffled me more than anything. I can get if it had an audience
more than, like,
and
sitcoms or
yeah
or soap operas or anything.
Well, that was my point. I'm like, if it was something like, I guess if like a certain amount of people watched it or whatever, that's fine. But the thing that I found baffling, because I watched it with my mom and stuff, and it must have had like a mature audience or something, because I've never met a single person that's seen it or, like, watches it. Other than, like, I guess, that's why I think it's clearly for parents, I'm guessing. But, like, yeah, the thing that I agreed with you on about I don't get it was that that's the thing I didn't get about, I mean, obviously I didn't watch it, so that's going to be my opinion, but just the fact that, like, there were so many articles and, like, almost like this rallying cry of, like, how could you get rid of the Great British Greatest Bake Off? Like, and I'm like, to your point, and I know I'm being semi-serious here, but there is some truth in what I'm about to say. Like, there's no rallying cry, like, when someone, like, accidentally, like, someone unfairly gets killed or, like, you know, there's not, like, thousands of people signing petitions for something that actually really does matter. Like, you know, there's, like, you know, like, hundreds of thousands of people, like, going, oh my god, I can't believe you're going to get rid of a program we really like. It shows where our priorities lie, really. You know, I guess to make a sort of powerful point about it, but
But as far as juxtaposition goes, I mean, Mel and Sue, they've been a comedy partnership for years, but I think people are intrigued as to how Noel and Sandy will get on, and I guess if they'll carry the show. But
actually, this is a really nice segue to something I forgot to talk about on Mentally Sound, so I'll talk about it here, is because it's fairly relevant. I saw this article with Sue, because it's Sue Perkins, isn't it? It's Mel and Sue, isn't it? Yeah, because so for those that are, again, not from England, Mel and Sue are kind of like, I guess, the female version of, like, Ant and Dec, which are another, like, presenter group from here, where they present shows, and they're, like, a comedy duo. And I would, I don't know whether Ricky agrees with this, but Sue Perkins is probably a little bit more notorious, like, well-known than Mel is. At least I certainly think that. I've certainly watched or seen more things with Sue in than Mel. But they used to do like
she's the funny of the two. She's appeared on Comedy Panel.
Yeah, she's been on QI, which we mentioned earlier, and she was on. She's been on.
Can I just?
Yeah, go on. I'll try and remember my point, but go on.
Yeah, yeah. She also stars in one of my favorite radio shows. Again, this is quite nerdy and geeky as well.
Doesn't have to be, but that's fun.
I don't know if you heard of the 99p challenge.
I have, yes. Yeah.
Radio 4 comedy program going back about 15 odd years. And it was brilliant. It was improvised. It was like, you had people on like Simon Pegg. It had Armando Iannucci. It had Bill Bailey. It was a similar crowd to Space Cadets, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just brilliant and snappy. And I thought Sue Perkins was great on it, actually. Just funny.
No. And as I say, there was a particularly good episode of Have I Got News For You where she was on the Christmas special. As she was Paul Merton's partner, and I thought she was really funny on that. But yeah, so the point I was getting at, because it was something Mentally Sound related, like as in it was about her struggles. I read an article about her, and it was, I think it was on a Metro, so maybe it was in Metro paper, or maybe it was I was at my mom's or something. But it was in some sort of like magazine-y type thing, because I don't normally read them. But I noticed it had said a heartfelt interview with her. And it wasn't like Hello or anything. It was just like a regular magazine. And it was like a 4-page spread thing, and it had some pictures of her and stuff. And it was all about like, because I didn't know anything about this, and maybe you might. But it was all about like her struggles admitting she was gay. And it was like really heartfelt, and like the sheer amount of like turmoil she went through. Yeah. Just not admitting that she was. Like, and she talked about like, you know, how she sort of pretended she wasn't, and like a lot of people who are gay do, is that they, if, you know, if they're unsure of the reaction, so they go through, like, you know, the example I always give when I'm talking about this is George Takei, who was Sulu in Star Trek. Like, he was heterosexual for a long time, as in he pretended to be, but then would, like, sort of sleep with guys, like, behind closed doors, without anyone knowing, even though people on Star Trek knew. But yeah, he sort of try and keep it a secret because obviously of the time, you know, in the '70s or wherever it was, he would have done it. Is that it's a lot less. I mean, it's gotten better, but it's still not, you know, where we want it to be.
Off the cast of Carry On, mm-hmm. and they had to keep it silent as well for the same reason.
Ah, right, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah,
if you think about the type of comedy that Carry On was, that kind of bold.
Who was it in Carry On? Did you say?
There was quite a few people, Charles Hawtrey, Kenneth Williams.
Yeah, I thought Kenneth Williams was gay. That's why I wanted you to clarify.
There were quite a few of them, but they had to keep the pretense that, you know, they would get them in scenes with obviously in a heterosexual situation.
I think the best thing to do now, Ricky, before we go any further about this discussion in regards to Kenneth Williams, etc., is to just, we'll consider this the end of part one, and we'll go on to talk about Michael Sheen and Kenneth Williams, which is the thought I was getting to, in part two, which obviously people can listen to when it gets released. So thank you so much to Ricky. Thank you for listening to part one of our hosted episode that we've done in September. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you for the next one. And as if you liked what you heard, please do let people know and subscribe to us on iTunes. We'll get the episode before anyone else gets them when they're released. Thank you so much, and end the podcast like I always end, in the words of the great B-movie robot Josh Crash and Burn, and we'll see you very soon for part two of this episode of the Geek Apocalypse podcast. Thanks, guys. Bye.